You can freeze like a 30-century man, like a 30-century man. I'll save my...
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the extended free preview of this month's episode of What a Cartoon Movie, all about Bender's Big Score. I am one of your hosts for this one, the snow-crapping ice honky, Bob Mackey, who is here with me today, as always.
Shaking hands with Charles de Gaulle, it's Henry Gilbert.
And yes, welcome to a little free preview of this month's very long podcast. And this month, we are bridging the gap between the Fox and Comedy Central seasons of Futurama by covering the very first movie and the one Futurama movie worth talking about, Bender's Big Score.
Yeah, we delved deep into this. It's the first time we've done a graining-related movie, and if you're a regular listener to the Talking Futurama, this bridges into us doing the Comedy Central seasons starting next month. But yeah, we couldn't skip this very important moment in Futurama history, though we definitely can lightly talk about the lesser Futurama movies.
Yes, we cover a bit of those. But yeah, in this podcast, you're going to hear a preview of the history of Bender's Big Score. Mostly, it's a history of how the DVD boom brought TV shows back to life. But if you want to hear the entire thing and hear our entire very long discussion of the actual movie, head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level. And once you do, you'll unlock this podcast and also 5.5 years worth of What a Cartoon Movies. I dare say over 300 hours worth of podcast content that's waiting for you. We've covered almost everything in the Disney Renaissance, every Toy Story movie, both Beavis and Butthead movies. We've covered Studio Ghibli movies like Porco Rosso, Whisper of the Heart, and other anime things like Akira and Ghost in the Shell and the Cowboy Bebop movie. And if there's something that we haven't covered, we'll definitely cover it at some point in the future because we will never stop. And that's all happening at the $10 level at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. And when you sign up for the $10 level, you get all the $5 stuff too. Henry, what's that stuff?
Oh, man. Well, especially if you enjoy this preview, you should be at the $10 level. And to get the $5 stuff, you'd get the Talking Futurama monthly new episode. And that's the entire back catalog. At this point, we have covered all of the classic Fox run of Futurama, and we're just getting warmed up because after we cover this movie, we are covering all of the Comedy Central years, and we just covered one of our favorite episodes of the Hulurama run that just happened last year, and that is only the beginning of the over 150 exclusive to Patreon podcasts you get at the $5 level too, us monthly covering an episode of King of the Hill as well, and the back catalog of all the previous King of the Hill podcasts, plus every episode of The Critic and every episode of Mission Hill also gets the podcast treatment, and many of our favorite episodes of Batman, the animated series. All of that at the $5 level, and included if you go up to the $10 level to hear all of the movies at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
And if you've never been a patron before, it's so easy to sign up. And when you sign up, you just use whatever podcast device or app that you normally use to listen to your normal podcast alongside of our bonus podcast as part of your podcasting lifestyle. And if you don't want to do that, there is a Patreon app for any smart device you might have, and you can listen to our podcast that way as well. But no matter which way you do it, it's so easy to access all the content waiting for you at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Now grab the nearest can of Torgo's executive powder and get ready for a little preview of our very long podcast about Bender's Big Score. So let's go talk about the history of Bender's Big Score. So if you want to know the history of Futurama, I recommend you go back and listen to 72 episodes of Talking Futurama, where we covered the Fox run over 6 years. But here's a brief history in a nutshell for the sake of, just summing things up really quickly. So Matt Groening creates Futurama for Fox. The network begins mistreating the show almost immediately, yet somehow it gets 4 production seasons. And as the network begins mistreating the show immediately, Matt Groening is immediately very vocal publicly about the mistreatment. So he is not happy in the press, But somehow, Fox does make four production seasons, or rather, they fund four production seasons of Futurama, even though it's a very troubled show in their eyes in terms of appealing to people and being expensive and so on.
Yeah, we were questioning it the whole time of like, you know, why did they keep renewing a show they clearly didn't seem to want? Like, why? Or that some major members of it didn't seem to want. Like, also in our, when we covered the first episode of Family Guy, that's when we really dug into how there was new management at Fox that were like, yeah, we want Family Guy. We don't want Futurama. We already agreed to Futurama. And then by the time they get to season three of Futurama, it seems like they don't want either of those things.
Yes, we were wrong about Family Guy, and we are always wrong about you, is what they would tell them. Yeah, I think the thing was, my speculation is that somebody at Fox, or perhaps more than one person at Fox, thought, all right, this show's expensive, and it's not getting the ratings we want, but if we can just get to 100, we can syndicate this. And eventually, they were like, ah, screw it, just cancel it. But it turns out they were right. They didn't need 100. Yeah. All they needed was 72 to syndicate this bad boy.
They were very lucky with the shifting style of cable at the time, and that Adult Swim got so big that they could license episodes and they would take whatever. I mean, because Adult Swim, you know, like say with Mission Hill, they just see, oh, you have only 13 episodes. Who cares? We'll run this forever, over and over again.
And it'll find the audience it never had on broadcast TV. So yeah, Fox airs the final episode on August 10th, 2003. But 7 months before this finale, something huge happens that determines the future of Futurama. Because on January 12, 2003, Futurama begins airing weeknights on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim programming block. And it should be noted that when Adult Swim started airing this in January, it had been 2 months since Fox had aired any Futurama. And Fox still had 10 new episodes to air of production season 4. So production season 4 had not finished airing on Fox yet, and Cartoon Network is airing all the reruns except for those 10 that had not aired.
That's crazy to know that it was that close against it. Well, and also, as we talked about in season 4 multiple times, that's, I think all of it was written, or at least first draft script written and table read before 9/11. And then you have things coming out almost 2 years after September 11th. And it all just feels so like out of place, especially on, say, 300 Big Boys, which is about a tax rebate no one remembers.
I was there. We both remembered it because we didn't get it. Go back to that episode to hear about our 18-year-old anger. So a Variety article from the time notes that Cartoon Network spent $10 million on a 5-year deal, and this would pay off for them greatly. So they made some waves with early Adult Swim with cheap original programming and some canceled animated sitcoms like Mission Hill and Baby Blues and The Oblongs. But Futurama and Family Guy reruns soon become the biggest cash cow for Cartoon Network. Mm-hmm. And everyone who had seen these shows sporadically on Fox over the past 4 years were remembering, oh yeah, these are really funny. Fox was hiding all of these shows that you liked, and now they were on every night.
For folks like us who were, you know, 17 when the first seasons debuted, now we were college age and had a lot of time to be, you know, awake late at night and watching Cartoon Network with little else to do.
Yeah, I can tell you that in this era, my friends and I were quoting Futurama to each other a lot because we were watching it every night. For, I'm pretty sure, the entire 5-year stretch, it was on Adult Swim, regardless of how much we had seen these episodes. And that's why, for a short time period, I thought I was over Futurama because I had seen the Fox one so much. And then getting back into doing the podcast, I realized, oh no, I love this so much. I was just a little burned out from nightly viewings of the cycle of the 4 seasons over and over again.
It's also funny that I was at the height of my distaste for Family Guy, and now, looking back on it, I still watched every Family Guy episode like 5 times over also because they were on right before Adult Swim, and we were watching what do you call it? Lineal TV is the name for it now. It was just what was on before it.
Yeah, I wasn't going to change the channel. I needed to study the thing I hated. And actually, it turns out I kind of liked some of it and was too ashamed to tell anyone.
It works so much better as just best of joke clip packages on YouTube. Like, that is truly the way Family Guy was meant to be watched.
Yeah, they were predicting the TikTok format, I don't know, 20 years before it was invented. Maybe more.
Yeah.
So what else is happening as Futurama is hitting Adult Swim? Why, the DVD boom, my friends.
Mm-hmm.
The first season of Futurama hits DVD in April of 2003, and it surely sells an incredible amount of discs thanks to the renewed interest in the series that came from the nightly Adult Swim reruns. So we're still 2003. I think 2002 to 2005 maybe is peak. Everyone's buying everything on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Those eras. Everything's coming out on DVD. Everything is getting commentaries. It's just a glory day for the format.
It was an amazing time to be alive. And it wasn't just because we were in our early 20s. It was a uniquely good time. But it really was like we were the people who would see like, oh, they finally announced the release date for Venture Brothers season one on DVD. I'm going to go to Best Buy the day before and see if they break street date on it. Like that's how obsessed I was with TV on DVD in that era.
Yeah, just the most obscure things would see full releases. Sitcoms that no one ever cared about. If you look them up, most of them had a DVD release between like 2003 and 2008, and every season got its own distinct DVD release. It just, the market was that hungry.
I was just watching a 4K version of the movie To Live and Die in L.A., and it's great. It's a great, great 4K version, but most of the bonus features on it are from the 2003 release of it because nobody has budget now for new special features. They can just show you 20-year-old special features.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of Blu-rays or 4Ks, but it's great to see how many old special features are grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. They're in 4x3, they're in SD, but they're like, we're not going to film another featurette. Are you crazy?
We don't have $50,000 to call people in for free interviews.
So at this point in history, Futurama has great cable TV ratings, massive DVD sales. There's a new DVD coming out, I think, every 8 to 10 months in terms of releasing the seasons. And suddenly, this little misfit macaroning show has a much bigger value than Fox initially assumed.
Mm-hmm.
So they were definitely wrong. They did not see this market in the future when they were only looking at what does Futurama do for us as a broadcast network.
It was a very empowering time for nerds, and which ultimately leads to the horrible world we live in now, where too many things are all for nerds. But I can just say for myself, it felt really good that shows would be canceled by executives, and I'd hear these stupid executives, and I'd hear that all through the 90s. And then in the 2000s, when that stuff happened, and then me and other nerds spent enough money, then the decision would be reversed and something will be made to please me, the consumer. And it felt really good at the time. Now we've been fed that candy all of the time. But back then, felt pretty cool.
I'm saying no more candy. I'm pushing away the bowl. I didn't ask for all these things. So with the Futurama renaissance on the horizon in this time period, we need to switch gears and talk about a much more popular animated series, Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Futurama starts airing on Adult Swim in January of 2003. Family Guy starts airing on Adult Swim in April of 2003. They soon become sister shows on that programming block. And its first season DVD box set released in April of 2003, Family Guy, by the way.
Mm.
This goes on to be the second highest selling television DVD ever, right behind Chappelle's Show season one.
So Family Guy outsold every previous Simpsons DVD release too. That is insane.
Yeah, and it was not even the good parts of Family Guy. Although I think the first DVD set was like all of season one and part of season two, however they split it up. It was a lot of episodes.
It started the Family Guy tradition, and that also, well, Futurama had the same thing, but also it's on American Dad, that you just call them volumes. Just, you know, it's a volume of DVDs.
It was a volume of content, but yes, very, very popular. Again, I think still to this day, the second highest selling television DVD ever,
wow,
right behind Chappelle's Show season one. Of course, I'm bringing all this up because the resurrection of Family Guy happened before Futurama's resurrection, and it really was the testbed to prove that the revival of an animated show like this was possible and very profitable.
As Peter Griffin would say, it was grinding my gears at the time that this was, that we had Family Guy before this. I mean, this movie has a mean Family Guy joke at its expense, which then also made me laugh that by the fourth movie, Seth MacFarlane's playing along and having fun and singing the opening theme song.
Yeah, completely forgot about that until I popped that in again. And by pop it in, I meant clicked on a VLC file and loaded it up on my tablet.
Right.
So yeah, based on the DVD sales of Family Guy alone, Fox ordered 35 new episodes of Family Guy in 2004, which began airing in mid-season 2005. And they also commissioned a direct-to-DVD movie called Stewie Griffin, The Untold Story, that would later be edited down into 3 television episodes. And this DVD release happened in the middle of Family Guy's first revival season. And if you know the history of Futurama, this is awfully familiar. A few details are different. You know, they order the TV episodes first, and then the movie happens after the TV episodes start airing. But we're seeing how they're looking at these different markets and how profit can be generated from them, and how, you know, people buying the DVDs want more things to buy.
Yeah, you can see it in real time. You got to see in real time Fox creating a business strategy they never had before about how to monetize content in a way they didn't as up to that point. Like, DVD sales were just a thing that happened. Like, they got extra of it. They didn't have to think about, like, making something. Like, Fox, unlike Disney, wasn't in the direct-to-video market so much at the time. They kind of had to invent a new way of doing it, which probably also means having to invent new, you know, deals and packages and all that. Also, I mean, Family Guy is a WGA show, and Seth MacFarlane is a staunch defender of the WGA, so I'm not saying this is like he did a bad deal for everybody there, but Futurama was always a more expensive show than Family Guy. Like, no matter what, it always cost more to make.
Oh, yeah. And the funny thing about this Family Guy reboot is that American Dad had been greenlit and put into production, and then Family Guy is renewed and put into production. And my opinion at the time was, why do we need this American Dad show? How wrong I was.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, no, it was so funny when we did the American Dad history a million years ago to see, like, oh yeah, American Dad was sold to replace Family Guy, but then there just was Family Guy. So it's just a redundant TV show on TV. But the fun of American Dad is that how the guys in charge of it who weren't Seth MacFarlane found a way to not be Family Guy on their show.
Yeah, and it's still around to this day, and so is Family Guy. And clearly Fox wanted to keep working with Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, yeah. No, did you? I mean, there just was that recent 25 years of Family Guy retrospective article, and it was just like, I tweeted this, but I thought, like, no show feels old because they're 10 years younger than The Simpsons. Like, all of these are, you know, 5 years younger than The Simpsons or whatever. It's every other show that runs forever. As long as The Simpsons continues to be on, they never feel like an old TV show.
Yeah, that's true. The Simpsons has, you know, only a decade on Family Guy and only, I think, like 8 years on South Park. But it still feels like, well, that's the old show. And South Park, I that feels fairly new, even though South Park is almost 30.
Yes, God. Oh, my God.
You know, things are only going to keep getting older, Henry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No,
along
I
with
know.
You and me.
Yep, yeah.
It's best to just accept it and grit your teeth. So Family Guy, way more popular than Futurama. But with reruns and DVD sales, the future is looking brighter for Mac ratings follow-up to The Simpsons. And a Variety article from January of 2006 claims that negotiations have started at Fox, though it wasn't yet clear if this revival would air on the broadcast network or on another channel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, based on interviews with Cohen and Groening, it seems that Fox wasn't quite as motivated when it came to Futurama, because apparently after the cancellation of the show, which I guess had a soft cancellation that they waited about a year to fully, you know, receive the message. So they weren't very polite about it, Fox.
Right.
But after the cancellation and post Adult Swim and DVD sales, they would call up Fox every 6 months and say, you know, we should really do a direct to DVD movie. I think the time is right. And Fox would humor them And, you know, they would call back another 6 months later. So by the time they call back in probably late 05, early 06, Fox basically pitches their idea back to them and they agree to at least have a meeting about it. And yes, David Cohen says this would not be possible if not for Family Guy. Family Guy proved we could do this and we owe them our renewal.
So thank you, Family Guy. I do appreciate that. No, that is hilarious. They had to deal with that. Though, I was going to say, oh, is it that the executives were, you know, hurt by all of the stuff Matt Groening said in the press against Fox? But it's like, you know, Seth MacFarlane and in Family Guy, they kick the network all the time. They make fun of Fox all the time. But maybe it's like, oh, the executives react to Family Guy like, oh, you, and they give it a noogie. Well, meanwhile, Futurama, like, how dare you?
Yeah, they don't mind when the money machine gently mocks them. As long as the kid keeps shooting out money, they're okay.
But a B-plus money machine making fun of you, it needs to earn a little more money.
Yeah. So they're called in for this meeting. And before the meeting, Groening and Cohen are working on this pitch. Like, we really need to sell this. We got to make it happen. They're worried that they might not be able to sell it to Fox. The second they walk in, the people at Fox are like, oh, yeah, you need to make two of these movies at least. So they're immediately greenlighting two movies because they're like, to make this financially viable, you're going to start a new production. We need you to make two movies just to make sure we're getting the most profit out of this as we find acceptable. And apparently they were working with the studio and not the network. They like the studio Fox. The people at the network Fox are the ones they hate. Okay. So they were happy to work with the studio because Fox Broadcasting had nothing to do with this production or future Futurama productions because they would not be airing these episodes on broadcast TV.
Fox Broadcasting were the ones who kept shoving them either before or after football, killing any momentum the show had. So that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that also for Fox Broadcasting, like, Futurama didn't bring in the ratings to get you a bonus as an executive, but I would at 20th Century Fox Studios, DVD sales of Futurama do get you bonuses as an executive.
Yes, they want a lot of content and they want it now. And apparently, according to Cohen, there was a game of chicken between Groening, Cohen, and the executives. Like, we could do three movies. What about four movies? And by the time the meeting ends, they have agreed to make four movies that would be released on DVD. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing they also decided these movies would be split up into four episodes each to later air on Fox or some other network. We find out that it will not be Fox, but I'm not sure exactly what portion of that was determined during this meeting. Now, I will say, they're recounting this on the commentary, this story, and when Cohen says, and then we agree to make four movies, Ken Keeler, who seems a little cranky, says, did they also say, take as much time as you want and spare no expense? Everybody in the room laughs. So we can see what they're up against. And that is a huge time and money crunch because they're going to be making these with a limited time frame, with fewer writers, with less resources. And I will say, the reason why reboots can be bad, it's because when it comes back, the people in charge say make it for way less money and fewer resources. And that was the case with these productions entirely.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the when it's not renewed as a real TV season, this is, I can see where they sneak in all the cost cutting measures they can, because Family Guy gets renewed for a real TV season, like 35 episodes of it being a real TV show, and they operate like a TV show, but will release three of those episodes as a DVD movie. Oppositely, when you okay them as a DVD movie, and then, like, they're doing it backwards, they okay it as a DVD movie, but then also say these will be rebroadcast, format them in a way that can be rebroadcast as a package somewhere as reruns, like, because I mean, economically, it doesn't make any sense to make four new Futurama movies that you can't also sell to a cable network, at the very least, for reruns. Or maybe, yeah, like you said, they'd want to, say, put it on Fox later if they've changed their mind.
Yeah, they have to write movies they've never written before. They have to make them, you know, dissectable into four distinct parts. And they have to do it with fewer resources and money. And, you know, there was a big crunch on the writing. The commentary for this is great. Ken Keeler is so cranky, and I love him for it. He is just very upset with how he wrote the script but doesn't remember anything. Mm-hmm. He doesn't remember which version of Fry is doing what. He seems just very lost because he was part of this grueling production to make these four movies. And on the art side, things were also bad. Director Dwayne Carey Hill, who directed this film, implies they were now making four movies, but the time they were given to make them didn't increase. They're basically given the time they were asking for to make the one film. So apparently in the Fox broadcasting days, the team was given 5 weeks to turn in a full layout for one episode. And in the movie days, for a episode size segment of the movies, they were given 2 weeks. So less than half the time production-wise on the art side to put these together. It's a miracle they look as good as they do.
Yeah.
But everybody was taking advantage of this opportunity, and Fox was being very cynical. It's like, hey, you want your reboot? You got to work for it.
Man, that's so, like, again, making four movies makes sense in that, you know, when you restart an animation production, you have to basically rebuild the factory. This, I was just thinking of it because when we did The Invincible, what a cartoon, they talked about why it took more than 18 months between season one and two. It's because they just had to create a whole new studio to produce season two that they didn't have for season one because that had closed down. So if you're going to restart the machine of Futurama and hire back whoever you can, you're not going to do it for just a new 90 minutes of content. You want to quadruple that. It makes sense in that way, but it's like to ask for the equivalent of a half season of 16 episodes, but then give them what sounds like what you'd make 7 episodes with, like that's shitty. Like that's pretty crappy.
Yeah, and again, fewer writers, less resources on the animation side. Christopher Ting is not getting an orchestra anymore.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Cutting corners. And, you know, the new Futurama, they have, a writing staff and everything, but they are cutting more corners than they did in the past. So every time something comes back, executives want to make it for cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not to flash forward too far, but yes, it sounds like Disney executives make Futurama staff miss the Fox executives' level of stinginess.
Yeah, hey, Al Jean tells me they're great to work with, and it's never been better.
They listen to so many things, and their suggestions are great too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always take them. You have to. So the movies are greenlit at some point in very early 2006. On the commentary, Cohen says that the writing began in February of 2006. At that point, it was just Groening, Cohen, and Keeler, though it seems like a rewrite room was built at some point for punching up these movies.
Okay, but not a classic writing staff that is together that convenes. Though, I mean, when you dug more into how season four worked, like you even asked Lou Morton, one of the writers for season four, we found out that it was a lot of freelance in season four. So season four already was a shrunken, diminished writer's room. So this is just a further contraction.
And we know now with shows what executives want. They want one person to go off and write an entire season, correct?
Yes.
And then maybe have one day where everyone meets to punch it up.
So that way you just pay them a one-day rate in a mini room, and then you have the full season, and you then start animating it. And if you want to rewrite anything, well, that's up to the one showrunner, if that. Mm. But otherwise, you are locked in because paying for rewrites of a consistent writer's room, well, that costs more money.
So at this point, the timeline is pretty funny, but all of these facts check out based on my research. So June 22nd, 2006 brings more good news for Futurama. In 2008, the series will begin airing on Comedy Central, and the cable channel will also be funding the production of 13 new episodes. And I want to note, this was before the movies were announced. So as far as we knew, this fifth production season would be 13 unique episodes of television.
Wow. My mind is really, I when you say it, I remember experiencing that in real time. But as I recalled it before, I was like, oh yeah, so after the fourth movie came out, then they announced what would be the first Comedy Central season. But no, they announced the Comedy Central deal before the first movie was even announced.
Yes.
Wow.
So yeah, June of 2006 is when they announce a new season on Comedy Central and that it will be moving from Adult Swim to Comedy Central. The reruns will be.
I was so pissed at that. I was so mad I'd have to switch to a different channel to watch Futurama reruns.
I mean, I think think it was worse when it was on Sci-Fi for a few years. That seems like, I mean, Sci-Fi, the term is meaningless, but it feels like it belongs more on Comedy Central than on Sci-Fi.
Mm-hmm. No, it made more sense. It's also funny, too, to think back to how the critic, just like 5 years earlier, was doing such great ratings on Comedy Central, but Comedy Central did not spend that much on original programming to pay for new episodes of Critic, even though they were having meetings with James L. Brooks and Gene and Reese to maybe do more. So by the time they get to Futurama, you know, 5-6 years later, now they're finally ready to spend almost network-ish money on new episodes.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Drawn Together, that I think that was their first little flirtation with broadcast quality animation because it was a rough draft show. It's also why the seasons were so small for Drawn Together, because Comedy Central was used to paying for South Park and, you know, Dr. Katz and things like that with limited animation.
Yeah, and it's why Drawn Together got shoved down our throats so hard, because it was a too big to fail TV show. Mm-hmm. Like they couldn't stop it because they had already spent that much money on it.
It had relatable everyman comedian Adam Carolla behind the wheel.
Yes. Listen to the gayest episode ever episode on it, guys. Mm-hmm. It's the to be reminded of its relationship to the Man Show was a depressing callback to things are so much better now than back then.
Oh, podcasting pioneer Adam Carolla.
It's true. We owe so much to Adam Carolla. We should listen to him more, shouldn't we?
We salute you, sir. So yeah, again, going back to the timeline, June 2006, it's announced that Futurama is heading to Comedy Central and there's going to be 13 new episodes. And then June of 2009, that's when the announcement post-movies happens, where they're saying, we're going to buy new seasons now, 26 new episodes. But the four movies that are announced in January of 2007... And in an interview with Rotten Tomatoes, Matt Groening explains the format. So he says, quote, "We are writing them as movies, and then we're going to chop them up, reconfigure them, write new material, and try to make them work as separate episodes. Chopped up is an indelicate way of putting it, but we are doing them as movies, and then we are reconfiguring them and writing new material and narration and this, that, and the other, so they'll stand on their own as episodes," unquote. My note is, I don't believe new content was added outside of clip packages and narration for these split-up segments of the films.
So I just rewatched them all on Hulu as the episode versions as well. And yes, every one of them starts with original animation of one of the characters saying, previously on Futurama, and like, you know, Kiff's head explodes, or Zap Brannigan kisses you, or whatever, and then it cuts to black, and they show the clip package. But I feel like maybe occasionally there's like a commercial parody they put in the difference, but there's so little different in it, and it just makes it very confusing. Like that was when I watched this the first time, Bender's Big Score, I didn't see the seams as much, but it was on the second one, where I was like, oh, okay, we're at 40 minutes now in the movie. Time for a reset of things. So, like, they're going to detach all of the genticles from everybody, and now it'll be a different status quo for this episode.
Yeah, in terms of editing, though, the movies are edited well, I guess, functionally, in which you're not seeing fade-outs for act breaks or the kinds of things you would see in broadcast television standards.
Yeah,
if it feels, in terms of how it's edited, like a movie, in terms of plotting, not at all, but yeah, it's not just awkwardly stitched together singular episodes of television.
Wild Green Yonder is the one that feels the most like they knew they, it's like they wrote it from the beginning knowing it would be cut up into four episodes, is what it feels like, because they have several jokes that end on a to be continue, and then it follows up with like nothing, or it mocks it. Like, for example, the end of part one is Bender and his mafia girlfriend get gunned down in the desert by the robot mafia, and then they just dig themselves out of the ground at the start of the next episode, and then a car comes up and picks up Bender's girlfriend, and he just waves goodbye to her, and that's the end of that at the start of the next episode.
I think it's because the first two movies usually have a singular writer, and then with three and four, every segment has different writers.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
So, yes, the four movies would be broken up to make a 16-episode production season five. So if you look at the production info during the credits, it'll be like a 5ACV01020304. So like each movie is four production episodes. And I'm guessing this was the case because Comedy Central paid $30 million for their five-year syndication deal. And it definitely made a lot of financial sense for them to have DVD sales subsidize the production costs of this first reboot season, in quotes. And again, we said it before, like, Drawn Together was them kind of flirting with production, or sorry, broadcast quality animation. And in 2010, finally, they're like, okay, we're going to make new Futurama, and our other show is going to be this thing called Ugly Americans, which I will say that's a solid, you gave it a woof. I will say, solid B-minus show with A-plus animation.
Okay. I didn't give it a chance at the time.
Did you watch any of it, is my question.
Yeah, I watched the first act of one of the premiere episode.
For whatever reason, I just was living alone and very lonely and bored, and I watched the entire season, just torrented it, and I was like, this is acceptable. And it's animated by Augenblick Studios, who made the first season of Superjail, and the animation often gets that good.
Okay, well, I see, I was, at that time, I was too busy watching Archer, whatever season of Archer was on FX at the time.
You know, I only watched one season of that show.
It's a good show. It's a good show. You know, and it gets better every season. It's an incredibly dense show. But the, yeah, that subsidy situation, that also, I think, was started by Family Guy, like, because Adult Swim was not going to pay for a new Family Guy, but they would offer a bigger licensing deal for new episodes that helped pay for Family Guy that would then be first run on Fox Network, but then almost immediately go on to Adult Swim. Like, it was not a 2-year wait or even a year wait in between episodes showing on Fox and then on Adult Swim.
And I really understand the necessity of having to do this, and it's not the creative team's fault. But at the time, and still kind of now, I do feel like it was the most cynical choice, and it made me feel like I was funding a TV season that a network could have funded.
Yeah, it did take a little out of the fan empowerment of, like, you demanded it, it came back. It's like, well, but you're not getting real movies. You're getting, like, if they had just sold it to me as, here's a new season, watch it, and we start with one movie, like, that would have been, I would have been more amenable to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as time went on, there was a smaller and smaller gap between the DVD release and it airing on Comedy Central. And I think by the time we get to the last movie, there's maybe 5 or 6 months between the release of that movie on DVD and the airing of the chunks on Comedy Central. So you were just, you know, suffering the same fate as every early adopter, basically just getting ripped off.
Yeah, no, that you're right. That did take a bit of the fun out of it, too, when I would see it debut on Comedy Central. I was like, but I, you know, it's why I was not ready to pay the money for it. But fortunately, as a underemployed video store clerk, I could at least rent them for free.
Yes, I think I was making like less than $16,000 a year. And but $20 is like $30 now, folks. I was sacrificing a lot of my money to get Futurama back on the air, and I need a statue dedicated to me somewhere. So more about this production. This was the first carbon neutral release by 20th Century Fox. That's right, they're saving the environment and you're footing the bill, because you're paying the cost of having a bad DVD case that falls apart, which will soon become the standard for all packaging of DVDs, unless you're buying a steel box or something.
Yeah, you know, blame that darn Al Gore for his correct fear-mongering about the future of the planet. But, like, yeah, I remember when I got that, when I held the box in my hand in 2007, and I think I was realizing, like, oh, all the Simpsons DVD boxes are going to be crappy now too, aren't they? And they were.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I love the environment. It's one of the reasons why I'm a vegetarian. I compost, I recycle, I do all the stuff, but I will gladly pay a little more to offset the negative side effects of making me a more durable DVD box set, because those first 10 Simpsons sets, they have been moved countless times over the course of me owning them for 20 years, and they are all in immaculate condition. Mm. I get a Futurama DVD set in the mail from the later reprintings. They've fallen apart in the mail.
Yes. No, I've taken my volume 4 off of the shelf, and the discs just fly out of it. Like, I have to keep it in this thing safely. Like, it's so, and all future ones would be that way as well.
I mean, the intentions are good, but it is the case of, oh, why doesn't the corporation do more that doesn't involve punishing me?
Yes,
you know?
Yeah. Now, this has been a big, like, discourse thing in environmentalism that, like, I definitely don't like the way you one could think of, well, if people are going to take private jets all the time that destroy the environment equal to me using never using a plastic bag ever again in my life, why do I fucking bother? Like, I get that kind of cynicism, but it doesn't mean you should stop. It should mean you pressure more billionaires not to take private jets all the time.
Yeah, it's like the amount of recycling and composting and everything I do in my life is wiped out by Taylor Swift getting on her private jet to get a Frappuccino or something.
Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, Elon Musk, wherever his planes are that we're not allowed to know anymore.
Yes. And I'm not saying that makes me want to stop caring for the environment. I just feel like, why do I have to suffer with loose discs and crappy packaging? Although, hey, they developed a pretty fun logo with Professor Farnsworth sweating in their carbon neutral logo.
They made a new logo each movie, too. It's a different logo at the end of each film. So that's fun artistry there. But, yeah, no, I want to be clear that I'm not saying because there's giant corporations that outpollute everybody that you should stop recycling or whatever. Don't do that. I think we should be doing these things. But I do wish that there was societal pressure mm-hmm. on companies the way that personal responsibility is foisted upon just an individual in our society.
And you know what? When you make your DVDs out of cheaper packaging material, it's a more profitable product for the company. So they're also yeah. making a lot more money off of you by spending less on materials.
Man, that's right.
Yes.
Man, we got conned.
Here's what David X. Cohen had to say about it. Quote, and oh, by the way, Disney, they're so carbon neutral, they don't even make DVDs or Blu-rays.
What a great trick, yeah. Well, meanwhile, every company is investing in AI technology that uses so much. It has like an insane carbon footprint to create garbage.
Yeah, every time Facebook shows me AI Calvin and Hobbes strip where they're like adults and they're in a throuple with Susie, a rainforest is burned down.
One football field
yes.
of rainforest gone.
So David X. Cohen on this, he says, quote, "This is Fox's first carbon neutral DVD. News Corp is pretty eager to become carbon neutral, so they helped us out a lot. We worked with this wind energy producer to get carbon credits to cancel out any pollution we caused. We try to reduce the packaging a little by removing the little plastic nub that the DVD normally sits on, things like that. So hopefully we made our former vice president proud of us." End quote. This is Bob speaking. This is News Corp at the tail end of the George W. Bush administration. It's just funny to hear people talk of them in glowing terms like that. Oh, they were so helpful and they loved the environment. I think David X. Cohen was being sincere. It's just that's the side of the company I never would have assumed existed.